Well, we're working our way through the Gospel of Luke, and I hope you're getting acquainted with Luke because we're going to be with him for a good while. I figured the other day it's going to be at least a year or two to go through this book because it's 24 chapters, and we never take a chapter at a time. We've been known to take maybe a verse at a time. We are up to chapter 5. We've only been doing this for 20 weeks, so we're up to chapter 5. And we're going to take a rather big chunk compared to what we've done in the past. We're going to look at 11 verses today, because now we're getting into the part of the gospel where Luke is going to be sharing with us episodes from the life of Christ. And those episodes are going to take up 10, 12, 15 verses. If you remember, Luke has decided, he has a friend named Theophilus who has heard about Jesus. He thinks he believes in Jesus, but he'd like to know a little bit more about him. And Luke's been traveling with Paul, and he's now with Paul in Rome as Paul is under house arrest. Paul's getting a lot of visitors from around the empire, people who know he's there. Different apostles perhaps stopping in to see him. And so Luke is in a unique position to be in touch with a lot of people who were with Jesus during his earthly ministry. And he's collected a lot of accounts, I don't want to call them stories, he's collected a lot of accounts of what Jesus did and what he taught, and now he's putting them in book form. And we've gotten through what I would call the introductory material. The narratives of the announcements of the birth of John the Baptist and Jesus, the narrative of the birth of Jesus and the things that were done when he was a baby and then a young boy of 12. That's Luke. I keep getting Luke and Matthew mixed up. But and then his baptism. Then he gives us his family history, his family tree, so that we know who his relations are. And then last week we saw the beginning of his ministry in the temptations in the wilderness, and then as he settled first in Nazareth, and then the people of Nazareth were kind of resented him because he dared to say that that there were other people in the world besides Nazarenes, and that some of them were actually more pleasing to God than they were, and they didn't like that, so they kicked him out of town. And so he moved to Capernaum and set up his headquarters there. And last week we heard about him in the synagogue, and he's healing people and he's casting out demons. He goes to Peter's home. Peter's mother-in-law is sick with a fever. He casts out the fever. And the next morning, he goes off by himself to recharge, so to speak. And the people of Capernaum come after him, and they're like, you know, we want you to do more and do more. And he says, no, I've got other places I have to go. And that's where we're at now. He went and preached in the synagogues of Judea. Now he's back in Galilee, and Luke chapter 5 begins with Jesus and his disciples. His disciples are still carrying on their normal professions. They're not disciples in the sense that they've left everything yet and they're following him. Peter is still a fisherman, as we're about to see. Starting at verse 1 of the 5th chapter. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, with the people crowding around him, and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats. Now, just in case you're wondering, the Lake of Gennesaret is the same as the Sea of Galilee. That body of water carries three different names throughout the New Testament, throughout the Gospels and Acts. One is the Sea of Galilee, that's what we're most familiar with. The second is the Lake of Gennesaret, as Luke says here. And the third is the Sea of Tiberias, named after the emperor Tiberius, whose reign had just begun a few years prior to Jesus' public ministry. So Jesus saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets and taking care of them. He got into one of the boats, which belonged to Simon, and he asked Simon to put out a little way from shore. Then Jesus sat down, and he taught the crowds from the boat. Here we meet Peter for the second time. We met him last week when we met his mother-in-law. And sometimes Peter is called, Simon is called Peter, because Jesus will rename him Peter. And sometimes even after he renames him, Jesus still refers to him as Simon. Peter has already acknowledged himself to be a disciple of Jesus. He was probably a disciple of John the Baptist to begin with. And as a disciple of John's, he lived in Bethsaida on the Sea of Galilee, but three times a year would travel to Jerusalem for the festivals. And whenever he would travel to Jerusalem, then he would join up with John the Baptist and identify himself as one of his disciples. So in the same way, now up in Galilee, in the region of Galilee, as he does his fishing work, he identifies himself as a disciple of Jesus, but he's still going about his work as a fisherman. Jesus uses his boat for the very simple reason that there's a large crowd of people there. And if Jesus stood on the shore and talked to them, it would be a little uncomfortable, and maybe his voice wouldn't carry as well. So he uses Peter's boat as a pulpit, goes out from the shore just a little bit, just to get some distance between him and the crowd. And then the way the lake is situated, it's like a bowl. The hills around it make like a bowl for the lake to be in. So that when he's sitting in the lake and talking, his voice carries up the hill, so that if you were at the top of the hills surrounding the Sea of Galilee, you could probably still hear him speak. So Jesus is doing this simply because it's a good way for him to be heard by everybody in the crowd. When Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and lower your nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we worked hard all night and caught nothing, but at your word I will lower the nets." When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets started to tear. So they motioned to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and they filled both boats so that they were about to sink, so full were they of fish. But when Simon Peter saw it, he dropped the net and fell at Jesus' feet, saying, "Get away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For Peter and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were his business partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be catching people." When they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him. It's a very familiar story from the Gospels. I've always been attracted to this story and the way Peter reacted to Jesus. To think, here's a man who had dedicated his life to fishing. I like to fish. When I was a kid and spent my summers with my aunt and uncle in Williamsport, I may not have realized it at the time, but I was living with a master fisherman. Every Saturday morning, bright and early, too early for me, Uncle Deke would get up. He'd get his waders in the car and put his fishing gear in the car. put his fly rod in the car, and his collection of flies. Go out to Loyal Salt Creek. And he would work the creek. And when I say he worked the creek, he was like John Hess. John Hess, one of our members, was manager over at Claster's, and he could work a customer, if you know what I mean. He was a salesman. And Uncle Deke was a fisherman's fisherman. He could work that creek. He'd go up and down that creek. And by lunchtime, he would have his creel full, and we'd have to go home because he reached his limit. Now me, I loved fly fishing. Tie that fly on the end of the line, whip it back and forth. I thought I was great. I thought I could be on TV the way I do this. But I just stayed in one spot. And I kept going like this. I'm like the guy who hit his head against a wall, hoping he'd break the wall down, I guess. Doing the same thing over and over again, although you always get the same results, which are nothing. I loved to fish. I never caught a thing. Oh, that's not true. One time, when I was with Uncle Dee, I actually caught something. I'm fishing, and I say to myself, well, Uncle Deke, if he doesn't catch anything right away, he changes flies. So I'm going to bring my fly in, and I'm going to put a different kind of fly on the hook, on the line. So I pulled in the hook, and here I had caught something. Right there, stuck between the barb and the shank of the hook, was a pebble. I caught something. The only problem was it wasn't big enough to keep, so I had to throw it back. Well, when I read about Peter, I thought they fished the same way I did, with a lure to try to attract the fish. And then the way you cast your line was supposed to entice them to be interested in what you were throwing out there. I was a little bit disappointed to discover that's not the way they fished back in the first century. What they did was they had a huge net with stones tied to it so that they could throw those nets in the water and the stones would make it sink. And then they would pull the net up to the boat and they'd just catch whatever happened to be in the way. Now me, I could be standing in the stream, and I could see that rainbow trout right over there. And I could throw my fly over right to him and have it land right on top of him. And play it in the water, and he would just be like, so what? But if I had had a net, and thrown the net in and pulled it, I'd have caught him. So I thought, well, there's nothing to being a fisherman in the Sea of Galilee. All you need is muscles to throw the net in and then to pull it in. But here was Peter and his crew. And they had fished all night and hadn't caught anything. Now I may make it sound like fishing for him was easy. I don't mean that it was easy. I just meant that they didn't have to trick the fish. They only had to catch them. But it took a lot of hard work. The nets were heavy, and if they were full of fish, as they were in this episode, they'd be very heavy. Then you have to pull them into the boat, and you have to empty it out. When you get to shore, then you've got to clean the nets and you've got to repair them if there are any tears in them. Think of what it meant for Peter to say to Jesus, Master, we worked all night and didn't catch anything. And you know we were sitting on the shore when you came and we were mending our nets because we have to do that after we fish for a night, whether we catch anything or not. It's a lot of work. But if you tell us to throw our nets in the water, we'll throw them in. It's more work. If you ever watched Deadliest Catch on TV. That's kind of like the fishing, only instead of nets, they're using cages. Whether we catch anything or not, it's a lot of work. But if you tell us to do it, we'll do it. So they go out to deeper water, they throw the nets in. And they end up catching more fish than they've ever caught before. So many fish in one net that they filled two boats. And now comes the most amazing part of the story of all. Peter, who makes his living as a fisherman, for whom every fish represents so much money, drops the net, falls at the feet of Jesus, and says, "Depart from me." Now, there's always two things that bothered me about that. First of all, Peter says to Jesus, "Depart from me," but where's Jesus going to go? They're in a boat in the middle of the lake. Where's Jesus going to go? It's like Peter has forgotten everything except the fact that they got this miraculous catch. And he talks to Jesus as if they're standing on the shoreline, and Jesus just came up and said, "How about we go out for dinner?" And he says, "No, I'm busy. Depart from me." And then the second thing, which I really don't understand, is why Peter said, "For I am a sinful man." What does being a sinful man have to do with fishing? And then I'm thinking, it was just last week that we read about Jesus in the synagogue. And there's a man there who's possessed by a demon. Jesus no sooner gets in his presence and the man starts screaming, "I know who you are! You are the Holy One of God!" And Jesus commands him, "Be silent and come out of him." And just like that, the man is thrown on the ground and the demon leaves him. Why is it that Peter didn't say to Jesus on that occasion, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man"? If it was the power of God that Jesus demonstrated in the miraculous catch that led Peter to realize just how powerful this man was, why didn't he recognize that when Jesus cast out the demon? Why was it that when Jesus went to Peter's house and Peter's mother-in-law was down with a fever and Jesus cast out the fever? I never heard of healing a fever spoken of quite like that. And the fever left her and she began serving? Why then didn't Peter fall at Jesus' feet and say, "Depart from me"? I mean, there Jesus could have done it. He could have left the house and gone somewhere else. Or when everybody in the surrounding area brought their sick people to Jesus and he healed them all. And the next morning he goes off by himself to a deserted place. Why didn't Peter follow him the next morning and say to him, "Lord, you're too powerful for me. I don't deserve to be in your company"? No. Through all of that, Peter is like, "Yeah, Jesus is my homie. He's my bud, my best bud. We're pals. We're going into business together." But then today, after a day of preaching, no miracles, just preaching, Jesus says, "Hey, let's go fishing." Okay, I'm a fisherman, let's go fishing. We're not going to catch anything, but let's go fish. Why don't you throw your nets down here? Already did that last night. There's no fish there. But if you say to do it, we'll do it. Wow. So many fish, they couldn't be numbered. And that's when Peter says, "Depart from me." When Jesus can't very well depart from him. Except he could have, because he can walk on the water, you know. And then he says, "For I'm a sinful man." What was it that Peter recognized at just that moment that he had never experienced before? That led him, a man who was ready to give his life for Christ, to decide that he wasn't even worthy to follow him. Maybe he was hearing in his ears the echo of John the Baptist. When the Pharisees came to Jesus, it came to him and said, "Are you the Messiah that we're supposed to be waiting for?" And John said, "No, not me. There is one coming after me so powerful that I'm not even worthy to untie his sandal laces." Maybe that's what Peter was thinking when he fell at Jesus' feet. Or maybe it's more like this. Peter is a fisherman. He's not a physician. So Jesus could heal people and Peter could say, "Well, he's a healer. I'm not a healer, but I'm a helper." But now Jesus is entering his territory. Jesus was not known as a fisherman. In those days, to be a good fisherman, you had to know the fish. You had to think like a fish. That Sea of Galilee was big. It was something like 15 miles long and 8 miles wide. That's a lot of territory. You have to know where those fish are, because if you throw your nets where they're not, you're not going to catch anything. And they had fished in the very same place that Jesus told them to fish. They had fished all night and hadn't caught it. There were no fish there. There are no fish to catch. And Jesus says, "This looks like a good spot. Why don't you throw your nets in here?" To me, it's a wonder that Peter listened to him and didn't laugh in his face. But when he caught those fish, here was Jesus, a novice, an amateur at fishing, and Peter, the professional. And Peter catches nothing, and the amateur catches so many fish, one net fills two boats. Maybe that was it. Maybe it was Jesus entering into Peter's strength and showing that Peter had nothing to offer him. He was truly unworthy. He called himself a sinner. He said, "Depart from me, I'm a sinful man." What's that word sinner mean? We use the word sinner to refer to a lot of things. The Bible has 5 or 6 different words that it uses for sin. This particular word means kind of like to miss the mark. It's like an archer aiming at a target. Not only misses the bullseye, misses the whole target. Comes from two words that mean not to share. It means you miss out on your share of something. And you miss out because you're not worthy. Maybe Peter felt like I feel at times. When I'm reading about another pastor in another church who started with 25 people in a storefront, and now he's got a mega church of 2,500. And I say to myself, well, what's wrong with me? I guess I missed the mark. And then somehow or other, Jesus demonstrates in my life that he can use me to touch one other person. And he says to me, if that's all you ever do, you are worthy to be my disciple. Maybe Peter was feeling overwhelmed by the majesty of Jesus in the very area of life that he was supposed to excel. Haven't you ever felt like you'd like to have one area of your life where you're the person other people come to for help? You'd like there to be one thing that you do well. And then you have someone come along and they do it without even thinking. I remember years ago when I did a children's sermon. Right here in this church, I had the kids gather and sit on the floor around me. I was proud of myself. I brought a shofar. If you know what a shofar is, it's a ram's horn that the Israelis use in their worship. You know, you put it up to your lips and you blow it. And I worked and worked and worked on that thing until I could get a sound out of it. And I was sharing it with the kids and saying, yeah, this is what they use back then. Isn't this neat? And I said, and this is what it sounds like. And I put it up to my lips and I tried and tried and tried. I said, anyone else want to try it? I should have known better. There was a girl sitting there who played the trumpet. She says, yeah, I'll try it. Okay, I felt about that big. I imagine maybe, just maybe, that's how Peter felt. Jesus could preach all he wanted to. That wasn't Peter's thing. Jesus could heal as many people as he wanted to. That wasn't Peter's thing. But a fisherman? Jesus, the teacher, a fisherman? And not just a fisherman. But he had totally outshone Peter at his own game. And suddenly, Peter realized he thought he was offering Jesus something special when he said, I'll be your disciple. Suddenly he realized, you have nothing to offer. And suddenly into my mind comes the song, nothing in my hands I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. These are the people that Jesus is pleased to call his disciples. Because Peter is saying to Jesus, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man," that's not the end of the story. The end of the story is, then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't put yourself down. Don't think that you're worth nothing. Don't think that you're a failure. Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be catching men and women." Just in case you were wondering. So when they brought their boats to the shore, Peter, in a fit of depression, dropped his nets and went home, right? No. Peter left everything and followed him. Left everything. And the main thing he left behind was his feeling that he had something special to offer to Jesus. Because now he knew that whatever God wanted to do through him, it would be Jesus at work through him. He needed not to do for God, he needed to be with God so that God could do through him. And that was enough for Peter. For a lot of people, that's not enough. They still have to feel important. They still have to be the center of attention. They still have to hear the praises of the crowd. But at this moment in Peter's life, all of that impulse left him. As he stood before someone who had outshined him in everything he was proud of, and now was telling him that he'd be an expert in something he never thought he could do. You know why I like fishing so much? I liked fishing because when I was out on the stream and my uncle was going up and down the stream, I was standing in one place and I'm just letting myself soak in the hills and the stream. If I'd have caught a fish, it would have been an annoyance because I'd have had to get it off my hook. I just loved being where I was. And I loved the fact that no one else was there. Because sometimes, like Jesus, we need to find deserted places. Not so much where we can find God as where we can find ourselves. And I'm thinking maybe Peter was like that, and one reason he was a fisherman was because he wasn't really a people person. Now, that's probably not true. I'm just projecting onto him my own feelings. And now here's Jesus saying, "You're going to catch people from now on." I'm not sure I want to do that. But if that's what you call me to do, and if you promise to work through me like you did with these fishing nets, all that matters, Lord, if you're not ashamed of me, all that matters is that I'm in your company, and you are doing through me what you want to do. Doesn't have to be measured in numbers. Doesn't have to be affirmed by other people. Just to know that we're together, that you're pleased to call me your servant, and that you have asked me to follow you. That's enough for me. that I will follow you into the valley of the shadow of death and know that you'll never leave me. Have you ever felt the holiness and power of God at work in such a way that suddenly you wondered if you even had the right to be experiencing it? Jesus brought Simon to that place and affirmed for him the calling that he had for him and gave him an opportunity to accept it. And he did. And from that moment, Simon was ready to become Peter, the chief of the 12 apostles. Only when God brings us to that point where we realize we have nothing to offer him, and he is offering us everything, and is pleased to do it, only then are we ready and maybe willing to leave everything, to follow him and not be afraid that when he turns around and sees us following him, that he might say, I don't want you. No, we're following him because he's called us. And he's called us because he loves us. And that's it. Not because of what we have to offer. Not even so much because of who we are. But because of how much he loves us. It is the love of God that transforms. It transformed Peter, and it transforms us as well. Heavenly Father, and can it be that you, my God, would die for me? How can I come to terms with a love so strong that it would die for me when I have nothing to give in return? Thank you for Simon. Thank you for his honest reaction to the holiness and power of Jesus. And thank you most of all for Jesus and his willingness, even his eagerness, to accept Peter as his disciple. For in accepting him, he is saying to me, I'm willing to accept you too. Through Christ we pray. Amen.